The opinions you love. The history you crave. This is Rant FM Radio.
America. This is Dusty Rhodes, the Bullet of Woods, the three-time World Heavyweight Champion. And when I'm not working for the common man, and when I'm not getting funky like a monkey, when I'm not getting the risky business, I'm listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, only on Rant EM Radio and the Shining Wizards Network, Daddy, if you will.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, the Impact Player, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
I'll be bad news, Brown, and right, Piper, you ain't nothing but a spine cockroach.
First of all, cockroaches don't have a spine. They got a hard shell. So we know two things about you. You're a jerk and you're stupid.
All right, Piper, you a sharecropper with big pop belly. You ain't a man. You different, you and them sharecroppers from me.
You're right, we are different from you. Us sharecroppers and me, we're different, we're honest, and we're real men.
You see, when it comes to me, there ain't no difference between black or white. I'm them all, baby. I will have my fist up for black power in WrestleMania 6, but it'll be for Mr. Mandela and me, RP. I don't die, I just smoke.
Well, that was interesting.
Yeah, you know, more Rowdy Piper and blackface. I can go with that.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. From the current to the way back, as always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, and I am joined by...
Assalamu alaikum. This is the Black Powers.
Alaikum salam. What's going on, brother?
What's going on, dude?
Black History Month continues. We are less than 1 week away from the launch of the Wrestle. I would call it the Netflix of professional wrestling.
Well, that's what it's shaping up to be, my man.
I'm so stoked, man! I just found out tonight that my Apple TV is going to be carrying the WWE app.
So, awesome.
So I don't have to stream it through any computers. I can just open up the application on the actual Apple TV, and I'm going to Ethernet that shit so I don't even lose my feed just to make sure, you know?
Badass.
All right.
So what are you most looking forward to with the network coming out? What's the first thing that you're going to watch?
The first thing I'm going to watch is the Elimination Chamber again. I mean, you know, I'm excited about the Monday Night Wars, obviously. I'm excited to see what they do to some of the pay-per-views in terms of production and editing and stuff. I know a lot of people are pissing and moaning about, oh, I'm not going to get the network because they're going to take the music out. And
Mike Norendonger.
Well, yeah, Mike too. But they've been taking music, a lot of music out from a lot of the pay-per-views because they're not copyrighted. I mean, they have a lot of guys put their stuff out. Rick Derringer, more importantly, who was a huge contributor in the 80s, is no longer a part of WWE for now anyway.
Mm.
And there's just a lot of talk. You know what? As an older wrestling fan, and I don't have to chase people across the country for videotapes, this is cool. If I can get my hands on original tapes, guys, please send them to me.
I can convert them. David knows this all full well. I've gave Dave all his. I've actually backed up a good chunk of Dave's collection.
Yeah, and Shining Wizards Eddie has the rest of my stuff.
Right.
If only he can convert all that.
Yes, and you've made a killing off some of your original tapes, and now we have all that footage.
So, yeah.
And it's coming to that. And we spoke about that a few weeks ago. I think it's going to be, you know, all this accessibility in terms of online and streaming, it's the next wave. And there's been talk with the WWF about getting a new TV contract, and I'm hearing NBC, I'm hearing a whole bunch of things, and some people were asking for more money than major sports. I'm talking about the networks.
Again,
wherever they go, they're going to make money. It's not – this is – Vince not making money is no longer an issue. It's come to the point now where, you know, he could stop wrestling tomorrow. He could stop – he could seize operations on all active wrestling that – his performers do, and he can bank on merchandise and video footage alone.
Yeah. For the rest of his life.
Yeah, absolutely. Like seven generations down the line, you know?
No doubt about it.
All right, so like I mentioned a couple seconds ago, this is going to be a continuing tribute to Black History Month. I want to get into a couple of newsworthy items. Let's see here. Where's my notes? And where are we? Let me see here. Okay. Yeah, here we go.
There you go.
So the WWE applies for new trademarks. Big network pitch, obviously, like I said, the Elimination Chamber. WWE has registered trademarks for NXT Arrival, which is a NXT pay-per-view debuting next Thursday night on the network.
I'm like really pumped up for that one, especially they got Sami Zayn against Cesaro.
Yeah, what do you think about them cutting some of the names? Like, just he's going to be called Cesaro.
I think it's completely fine. Like, it's, you know, like when Batista was around, you know? He was Dave Batista. Now, then he became just Batista. So, as far as I'm concerned, it's fine, you know. Fans are going to call him whatever the hell they want to call him, you know. So, it doesn't make a big difference to me. Plus, like, what, they had him on Raw with Cena recently, but what have they been doing with him lately?
Right. All right. They're going to do the Yes Movement. They want to trademark that, and they want to trademark the name Daniel Bryant for use of their toy line. Yeah, interesting. Regarding
his image or his name or...
Just that name, Daniel Bryan. It's going to be used for their toy line. That's, you know, all the toys.
Yeah, plus if he were to go back on the indies anyway, I'm sure he would just go back to Bryan Danielson, so...
Right, that's his name, isn't it? That's his legit name? Okay. Batista will be playing Drax the Destroyer in the new Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy movie. If you're a fanboy, the book is pretty good. I'm anticipating the movie. A 15-second trailer was released today. The full trailer should be out soon. Movie comes out later on this year.
Yeah, I think he said something about it's going to be debuting on, Jimmy Kimmel Live tonight? Tonight Show with Jimmy Kimmel?
Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel takes the reins over, man. He's going to have that job for a long time, dude.
Yeah, longer than Conan, unfortunately.
Right. Regarding the lack of promotion for the WWE Network on last night's Raw, word is that WWE is planning on doing a heavy pitch for the launch during the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. Now, this is going to coincide with the following night in Green Bay, Wisconsin, which is not only sold out, but rumors to have Hulk Hogan and Undertaker, like we mentioned last week.
What about Sting? Sting. Is he going to be there?
That's what I'm hearing. If you listen to Double A's rant a little while ago, on the live network will be on March 5th, rantemradio.com, the Tuesday show. Double A announced that he read that Sting is not only going to be there, but he wants to fight Taker at Mania.
Oh, now you're talking.
Now, one of the things he brought up, and I'll give him credit. He didn't mention where he got his source from, so we're gonna credit AA at this point. But AA mentioned a little while ago that not only is Sting willing to do the match, but you know how Taker likes to work the match out prior.
Yeah.
That's why all his matches are pretty decent at Mania, because he rehearses them with whoever he's fighting.
Yeah.
Apparently, not only does he live in Dallas, but Sting lives in Dallas, Texas.
Oh.
And has agreed, apparently, this is what we're hearing, he has agreed to go to Taker and his gym and work out a match if this comes to pass.
So this is what AA heard when he was putting the cup up against the door.
This is what AA dropped on me a little while ago, and I thought, you know, I've put this on right out there.
All right.
Now, you...
So wait, what are we going to do to AA if he's wrong?
Well,
there's got to be some sort of punishment, you know, if he's wrong.
You can't cross the boss. What's wrong with you?
Well, what if the boss crosses himself? What happens then?
I didn't say he... I said he got this info. I don't think AA is an insider. And if he is, he plays a really good part. So,
okay.
All right. So that's going on. Now, I had mentioned a few weeks ago that I don't want to see Sting in the ring. Now, my question to you is...
Okay.
Now, my question to you is, if he goes in the ring, does he do the job?
You know, I've been thinking about that a lot lately. Yeah,
don't tell me he has to. I mean, understand that the streak is on the line, and you mentioned the streak in pre-production.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that in a few minutes. But does he have to lose?
No, I don't think he has to lose. And if this is his one shot in the WWE... You know, part of me feels that it would be completely appropriate if he were to get the win at WrestleMania and defeat the streak, break the streak. You know, granted, I know Sting is like old, he's beaten down, you know, old gray mare just ain't what he used to be. But, you know, I feel if these guys can put together something, you know, really special for Mania and, you know, knowing Sting's history, you know, this would be a big feather in his cap, you know, a big moment for him to solidify his career as legitimate, in my humble opinion.
All right, we got some breaking news on the rant. I mentioned a couple seconds ago that Big Daddy...
Newsflash.
Yeah, Big Daddy V, otherwise known as Nelson Frazier Jr., a.k.a. King Mabel, Viscera, passed away today after a massive heart attack. He was 42 years old.
Massive heart attack.
Well, yeah, he was a big dude. As more information becomes available, we will bring it to you. On behalf of the rant, on behalf of the Shining Wizards Network, Dave and I want to send our deepest condolences to his friends and family. So that's pretty sad.
Mm.
All right, so getting back to Sting, it's...
You just broke this bombshell. Getting back to Sting.
You want to talk some more Big Daddy V?
A little bit.
All right.
Before we get back to Sting.
Big Daddy V was at a discussion on the Wrestling Call-In show on Saturday night. I actually got a chance to call in again. And there was talk about, you know, the stigma of African Americans not being world champions as frequently as they should, or why, and actually some people in the chat room thought I was black, and technically I am because I'm Sicilian, but that's another thing. We'll get into that on another podcast. But
yes,
it was, I answered the question, and I, you know, well, they gave King Mabel the King of the Ring, and they gave so-and-so, and I said, when I grew up, a lot of the African-American wrestlers were gimmicky, and most of them were mid-carders by the time they got to the big dance.
Yeah.
Not taking away from anything that JYD and Butch Reed did in Mid-South, or with Coco Beware did in Memphis, or what Thunderbolt Patterson did in the NWA as part of the World Tag Team Champion. Of course, Bobo Brazil being the first black U.S. heavyweight champion.
And what Virgil did on Superstars against Bret Hart.
Oh yeah, the Virgil match. That was a barnstormer. With the hashtags, air quotes up in the air right now. But you, I mean, I told these guys, I'm like, it's not that they didn't get a chance. It's just that I really couldn't give them a definitive answer.
You know, I understand where you're coming from, because especially a lot of those guys, as over as they were, you know, so, like you said, you know, some of their gimmicks were too gimmicky, and, you know, we'll get into Bad News Brown later on, but, you know, for me, just some of it wasn't, you know, as believable as it was, you know, nowadays, you know, whether it's your Ron Simmons or your The Rock as world champion, you know, just certain things, like, I don't know, like, especially where, you know, King Mabel was coming from with Men on a Mission. You know, he was, for me, he just wasn't believable as a world champion. But then again, Diesel wasn't really that believable as a world champion either, and he got his shot, so.
You know what? And I told this to Surfer and a couple other guys in the chat room and on the call-in show. I said JYD was just as popular and over it as Hulk Hogan at one point.
Mm.
And that's no joke. We discussed that when you first joined the show.
Yeah.
But the problem was he was A, overweight, and B, he had a drug problem.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that's a stigma. I'm talking about, like, you know, there were certain guys. Listen, Ron Simmons getting the strap was the best thing, and that was a Bill Watts move.
Yeah.
And Bill Watts.
Him trying to recreate JYD, supposedly.
Right. And I think Bill Watts got redemption for putting Simmons over. I mean, listen, Simmons, to his credit, held up his part of the deal. He was a phenomenal talent.
Absolutely.
And he can move. He can work. He was a big guy. And
even in ECW, he was just that ass.
Yeah, his stuff with Shane Douglas and Tully Blanchard in ECW was fantastic. Yeah. So, you know, there was a contrast. I'm not saying every African-American wrestler was bad coming up. I just think that they all came from another territory where they were popular. Like, and I mentioned this too. I said, look at guys like SD Jones, who was an NWA tag champion. By the time he got to WWE, he was not only old, but he was a mid-carder at best, then a jobber. He went from a mid-carder to a jobber and then got a fucking action figure. What jobber do you know getting an action figure?
SD Jones and Johnny Rods.
Exactly. So it wasn't like they weren't popular. I just think they weren't properly booked at some points. And again, this was the 80s. Politics prevented a lot of accountability.
Yeah.
We talked about that when Hogan was the king, because a lot of guys that he fought could have been, should have been world champions, the Orndorffs of the world and the Pipers and, you know, the Mr. Perfects and...
Yeah, and even, you know, Kamala talks a lot about, you know, how he, you know, he wasn't really business savvy, so he really couldn't make, you know, the deals that other guys were making. I know for him, in particular, he brings up SummerSlam 92 against The Undertaker. And, for that deal, you know, he was talking with Taker, found out what he was making that night, and... realize what he was making that night, and there's a huge gap in between, so...
Oh, when you got a lot of money, Dawn Marie. Look here. You know what? That's just him being bitter.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty sure that he got paid whatever he was... They didn't, like, change his salary because of the match. They just gave Taker more, I guess, because he was more of the gimmick at the time.
I mean, plus, Taker was moving up, so...
Yeah, it wasn't like a thing where Kamala was 25 years old, you know what I'm saying?
No, Kamala had his time, you know, in the WWE, you know, with Hogan, had his run with Hogan. You know, he was doing his shit down south, so he had his time.
So let me ask you something then. What do you... Let's say I give you a book, and I give you... you know what? It's really, I guess, by decade. But if you were to book a black world champion, and who would you give it to? I mean, you already had The Rock. You had Ron Simmons.
Now you mean the first black world champion?
No. What? No. What? Who would you give a strap to?
Right now, like what time period?
Well, let's say it's 1982.
82.
And there's still territories. Mid-Atlantic, North, Pacific, Northwest, the Southeast, the Southwest, and the Mid-South.
Hmm. As I'm trying to think, 82.
Who was still
good to go at that point. Bobo Brazil, he was kind of, you know, in his waning years, right?
Let's say the Crockett's bringing Mega Powers to book. All right, here, Mid-Atlantic.
Okay.
Give me a hot African-American wrestler to run with.
The best black talent available, huh?
Right, run with Ric Flair. You giving him Junkyard Dog, who can't wrestle, but he looked good? You giving him Butch Reed, who
Butch Reed was second rate in my book.
See? I would give him a run.
Well, he was actually one of the runners up. Besides Bobo Brazil, he was also a guy who supposedly won the belt, but they, you know, did a dusty finish and left empty handed. So he was one of those guys. Just for me, I never really, even back then, I never really saw him as a top talent. I guess for the sake of giving an answer, I'd say JYD, just because he did have that kind of personality, that charisma.
Yeah, he was.
And but I think with the NWA, they weren't looking for dudes like that, which is probably why he never got a run, why, you know, Lawler never got a run, because they were also expecting those dudes to do those hour-long Broadways.
But if
they're bringing in me, and I'm making the choice, right, and it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks, I'll go with JYD.
There you go. Okay. So we agree. All right. Let's see. Any other good news? I caught TNA last week. And I wasn't... I mean, TNA is taped up until March.
Oh, God.
So I wasn't totally... like.
Well, March isn't that far away, but still.
No, they did a whole tour of Europe, and they... and they're going to just promote that until the next pay-per-view, which is the lockdown pay-per-view. Now, we spoke about MVP being the, I guess, the face. Yeah. Now, a couple of things I got out of this. Dixie Carter needs to get off television. Straight up. Needs to get off television.
What has she been up to that she needs to get off television?
She's like a Vicky Guerrero type. But Vicky, you love to hate. Like, Vicky played her part, and you knew she played her part. Dixie just, and I mentioned this too a while back, she works too hard at something she's not really good at.
Yeah.
Where Vicky's really good at it. You see what I'm saying?
Vicky's been brought up in a wrestling family, you know,
exactly.
And Dixie Carter just, you know, was in the Ted Turner role of just happening to own a wrestling organization, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, MVP... again, with the Power Ranger outfit. He actually wrestled against that rock star Spud guy. I never had a problem with MVP in the ring.
I did. I was never a big fan of his. Even when he was in New Japan, I was like, why did they have this guy here? And I had to witness the whole New Japan IWGP Intercontinental Tournament with him winning it. I went to all those shows on the East Coast and had to watch him, you know, take the tournaments, and I was like, oh, really? This guy?
But let me ask you, since you're a big advocate of Japanese wrestling, you didn't think he was good enough to wrestle in New Japan? Because, I mean, only guys that can go get spots there, right? I mean,
not all the time. They got guys like Strongman. the dude's just a bodybuilder. He knows how to... He trained for wrestling, but when you watch him wrestle, it's like, what the fuck is this guy doing in New Japan? And, you know, as far as MVP, in my opinion, you know, I never really saw him more than just a mid-card guy. You know, granted, New Japan, in a lot of Japanese companies, they'll bring in a lot of American talent, especially if they're from WWE, just because they have that street cred. And I felt, the same thing with MVP, that they brought him in just because he had that street cred. And he was an ROH guy, too, very, very briefly. I think, like, under his own name or, something of that nature. But, he was always one of those guys that never really, caught my eye. Even when he was feuding with Benoit at WrestleMania they had a match? Just never really, never rose to my expectations of a pro wrestler. Not to say that he's the worst, but, he's just a dude that I don't really see in a top spot. I'll never see him in a top spot.
I got some breaking TNA news. Independent wrestler Bruce Santee worked in TNA in 2004 and 2006.
He's dead too?
No, this just came over the wire actually about 10 minutes ago. Was arrested this past Monday on a charge of written threats to do bodily harm.
Santee, to who?
Apparently Kurt Angle. Santee has also worked a tryout match at WWE and did some extra work for the company. Santee was riding in a vehicle that was stopped by police on Sunday. He wrote on Facebook that the arresting officer's name offered him $100 to anyone who would kill the officer.
Wow.
Somebody, Kurt Angle, I think, was involved in this, apparently. Santee was taken into custody by detectives from the Pinellas Park Police Department, released from Pinellas County Jail after posting bond. Here is his mugshot photo. He looks like Kurt Angle, I should say. That he wasn't. I don't think it was Kurt Angle, but
maybe he's trying to steal Kurt Angle's identity. Yeah. Maybe he's trying to be his doppelganger.
All right. Here's some interesting TNA news. Jim Cornette was on Ring Rust Radio the other night, and I quote, "At this point, can you fuck TNA up any more than it's already fucked up?" TNA, besides an inexperienced owner, had everything they needed. Jeff Jarrett wanted the company to succeed. He's grown up in wrestling all his life, and the problem I have with Jeff is that he's the one who hired Vince Russo, which came to bite him in the ass. They have the television, they have the roster, they have the money behind them. Yes, Dixie Carter doesn't know shit from apple butter, which is true, I just mentioned that. But the wrestling business, but she should have stayed out of it and let people who knew what they were doing run it. Which is, again, as I just said.
Man, it's that ego getting in the way. People, they're putting their money into something and they see folks like the McMahons and Vince Russo and all those other schmucks getting on TV. And some of them do a good job and they think that they can do it because, wrestlers aren't trained actors. They're trained performers. And, it takes time for them to develop their personalities and stuff like that. And, how long has Dixie Carter been involved with this? And just not producing, results from her own personality,
He says, and I quote, "Russo gave them the TNA stench from the start when they that they have retained. They lost their chance to make a first impression, which is a shame because no one will ever be close to challenging Vince McMahon again." Jeff Hardy returning to TNA as Willow. I saw that promo and I was like, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Well, except for was our listener Eric Martin, who loves that shit. He's just eating it up. The only guy eating that shit up.
Here's something interesting. Now, we talked about this about a month or two ago, that Muda was in talks with Wrestle One.
Yeah.
To do some stuff with TNA, and then he backed out. Well, apparently they made nice again. Wrestle One Japan has held qualifying matches to determine who faces the TNA champions on March 2nd for the TNA One Night Only Outbreak pay-per-view taping in Tokyo, Japan.
Nice.
Your matches include Magnus versus Kai, the Bromans versus Shuji Kondo and Kaz Hayashi.
Mm.
And your X Division champion match is Austin Aries versus Seiya Sanada.
Mm.
So, looks like the Great Muda will be involved in TNA after all. Let's get back to WWE real quick. Did you catch?
We never got back to Sting.
Well, yes, I'm saying we get back to WWE.
Sting. Upcoming for you, Sting.
There you go.
All right. Wait a minute. Let me get some effect on it. Wait.
Sting.
Okay, much better.
Okay. Now, again, I mentioned I didn't want him in the ring, but I think if they can work it out with this match and that's it, one and done, I'm good. If you're going to sign him and make him sit a year and do network shit or GM shit or, like, behind-the-scenes shit, then I'm just not cool with that.
Mm.
But you want to see him in the ring? I don't, you know.
I would at least want to see him against The Undertaker at WrestleMania. That's, you know, that's the match. Maybe some tag matches, stuff like that. But, you know, obviously by his performance in TNA for years, you know, just ain't the same thing, you know. It's not like Ric Flair's return. But, I don't know. We'll see if he's got what it takes to hang in the WWE. But at the very least, only match I would absolutely love to see him in, whether it's bad or good or whatever, is against The Undertaker at WrestleMania 30.
All right. Did you see Raw last night at all?
No.
All right. Well, try to see the Cesaro Cena match list from last night.
Yeah, I heard some great feedback on that. I'm gonna have to make some time and check out that match.
Word. All right.
So I heard they tore shit up.
They did, man. It was a good match. There's certain things. You know, again, you get the constant, you know, hate towards Raw and towards the current product. And we're guilty of it. I know Shining Wizards Eddie is very guilty of it.
And we've been guilty of it since, you know, God knows when. Since, like, what, like 91, 92?
Yeah. This is, again, you have to look at the positives. And last night was a clear-cut positive. Cena, of course, I was talking to Tony Z from the Wizards, actually, as this was going on. He messaged me, and he's like, wasn't that a great match? And I was like, yeah, it was a fantastic match. He goes, well, Cena fucking ruined it by not selling. And I said to him, I noticed this with John Cena. The longer I watch him, the more harder it is for me to accept him. Like, I'm beginning to dislike him, and I did.
Oh, you're beginning to dislike him?
Because you know what, dude? He's not a terrible wrestler. You give him the right guy, he can fucking move. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, especially when he first came in, but I don't know. Speaking for myself and myself alone, he's a good wrestler.
He's got
some sound, you know, basics. He's got, you know, decent footwork.
But the problem is,
you know, I don't know. He's just one of those kind of guys who I can't accept somebody who can't get a singular reaction out of a crowd. Like, the in between stuff doesn't really work for me.
Here's what bothers me the most, and we talked about it last night too, is that he does not sell. Like, there are times where he sells amazing.
Mm.
And there were nights like last night where he has this awesome match with Cesaro and doesn't sell. Like, that could have been a 5-star match last night, Dave. Seriously, sincerely. It could have been.
So, how many stars do you give it right now, knowing that he wasn't selling properly?
About 3.5, 4.
3.5 to 4?
Yeah,
okay.
But that could have been a 5-star match. That could have been match of the year, and it's only February. If
he sold.
He sold, yeah, exactly.
But selling is, you know, nowadays it's just, you know, becoming a thing of the past. Even, you know, as time goes on, a lot of guys just aren't selling, and it's like, dude, what, do you got to get fucking shot in the chest to to lay down on the mat for a little while? Or, you know, the only time, like, you know, I can recall, you know, seeing some, like, decent selling is just during the Taker matches, you know, at WrestleMania. Like, but why is that the case? Why, you know, one of my big gripes was that the first, you know, Michaels Undertaker match, it was good. It wasn't great. But everybody was, you know, lauding it, you know, as this, you know, holy grail of you know, wrestling for the year. But it's like, you know, start selling, you know, start just doing decent fucking matches. And, you know, that doesn't have to be the greatest match of the year, because it wasn't. But I don't know, just I don't know what I don't understand how nowadays that selling isn't a thing anymore. It's becoming less and less. Not just with Cena, with a lot of guys.
Are you typing?
No.
I hear like a tapping.
I'm not tapping anything. I never tap.
That might be just the audio. All right, no big deal. All right. I think that's it with news. I don't have a whole lot of news. I just wanted to go over to, you know, I know Ring of Honor's got a big show this weekend, their anniversary shows.
Chikara's coming back.
Chikara's coming back. We spoke about that. I want to make
the Wrestle Factory's coming back too.
Wrestle Factory's coming back. I want to make it to the Ring of Honor show in May at the Hammerstein.
Mm.
And I want to make it to that Chikara show also in May out in Eastern PA. So that should be fun. We have a ass ton of questions to get into.
Yeah, a lot.
Get into our throwback. Our buddy Java Junkie, shout out to you. He wants to know, here's a question based on a convo that I had with him. Do you think from, say, 1970 until now that Gorgeous George, though uncredited, is the example of successful heels? Is the example successful heels have taken from? Or is he so insignificant in wrestling history? You want to answer that before I answer it?
Yeah, I'll jump right into it. Yeah, I feel he's still like an insanely huge influence. Because, you know, first of all, he was put into the WWE Hall of Fame not too long ago. Wait, how many years ago was it when they put him in?
Not too long ago. Not too long.
You don't remember?
No, not too long ago. I thought you heard me. I was away from the mic for a second.
Yeah. But yeah, he was put into the WWE not too long ago. He's, you know, Vince McMahon credits him as his favorite wrestler. And also, you know, he was like the first dude to really have some, you know, huge showmanship to his character. Like, you know, he was an out-and-out performer. He wasn't really, you know, a wrestler. Even Lou Fez talks about him in his book that, you know, he had a great respect for him. Couldn't wrestle a lick, but the guy drew. He sold tickets, and that's what you got to do in wrestling. You got to sell the fucking tickets. And, you know, his influence has gone on to Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, to Ric Flair, you know, dudes who fucking bleach their hair, regardless of who they're saying that they're doing it for, because, you know, whether it's a Kurt Hennig, a Ric Flair, whatever, Gorgeous George was the first. You know, his legacy will live on longer than we can ever imagine. He was one of the first wrestlers to be in a film.
Have a valet.
What's that?
He was one of the first to have a valet as well.
Yeah, what was it? It was Moolah was one of his valets, right?
No, she was the Jungle Girl. For somebody, I forget.
Slave Girl Moolah. Forgot right, for right. Who.
Yeah, but I agree with you, and I mentioned this too a while ago. In pro wrestling, imitation is the best form of flattery. And I think he trendsetted three more generations after him. So I don't think it's insignificant, Java. I just think that it's not mentioned in its like it should be. And wrestling history a lot of times gets lost in translation because of the era that we live in now. And I say that because unless it's a Hall of Fame ceremony, unless it's a straight copy from a gimmick that somebody else used, that somebody picked up on a website or something, or an indie guy was doing it, they're not gonna mention Gorgeous George on Raw. They're not going to mention him on SmackDown or Ring of Honor or you know, or TNA.
According to Matt Stryker, that's why he lost his job, because he was, you know, so caught up in referencing the past while not really recognizing the future. So
that is a guy who should be listening to our podcast.
That's a guy who we should have on the podcast.
We'll see if he comes on.
Maybe
we'll see him at the Legends of the Ring in June.
Yeah.
All right.
Get his ass up on here. I know he's got a wealth of knowledge to share with everyone.
Our buddy Scott, who works for Dish Network, wants to know our opinion on the information surfacing that cable and satellite providers will drop any and all upcoming WWE pay-per-views from their lineup. How do you feel as the fan base if this holds true? Okay, well, it did come to pass. It is true. Dish Network is actually ceasing operation with WWE. They're not doing any pay-per-views starting with this coming Sundays. In response to the network announcement, I don't know. I guess they're afraid to lose money. I don't know.
Well, there's always going to be those people out there that, you know, they don't have the network. They just want to buy that one pay-per-view. You know, say that they're that person that buys WrestleMania once a year. You know, they want to have that option.
Yeah, I mentioned that a few weeks ago. Like, not everybody's going to buy the network.
Yeah.
Okay. Only the hardcore knuckleheads like we are going to buy it because we want all the content, we want all the pay-per-views.
Yeah, we fucking hoarders. We want to hoard all the wrestling that we can have.
Right, so, you know.
And watch it whenever.
As a fan, I can give a shit because if I didn't have the network, I order the Big Four anyway.
Yeah.
I you know.
But, you know, for Dish Network, I don't really know too many people that have, you know, Dish, period. So I really don't know how much that affects, you know, others. Because there's going to be plenty of other cable companies that are going to carry it. You know, for those people that don't have it, I'm sure they're just going to get the network and, you know, spend the $60 for the 6 months and, you know, ride it out, enjoy wrestling for a little bit, and be done with it. Because they'll be spending $60 anyway for the fucking pay-per-view. Or probably even more. What is it, like 70, you know, once WrestleMania comes around, or how much?
Right. I can tell you now that, and we mentioned this a few weeks ago, that a lot of friends that we know canceled their cable, I think you included.
Yeah.
No longer have cable, just stream stuff off the internet if you want to watch TV.
Watch Netflix, Hulu, whatever.
Right, and that's becoming a thing now. And the people who don't want to, or in between, who don't want to pay for cable, but still want to watch TV, they get satellite because satellite is a lot cheaper. I mean, the cheapest satellite package is like $20.
Really?
And you get like 200-300 channels. But I had satellite, and I was happy with it up until the first
summer raining,
snowstorms, and shit like that. So
exactly.
Right. So on that note, no. Scott also wants to know, how do we feel about the Lego-style WWE toys coming out called Stackdowns? They were – he put a link on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
Actually, it's funny that Scott posted this because yesterday I was at a Lego store in I believe the town is Elizabeth in New Jersey, the Jersey Gardens Mall.
Oh, shit. They got they got a Lego store there?
Not only did I have a Lego store, but I scored a mint playset for the kid. Well, actually, it's from me, but I'm not telling him. He's going to get it, but I want to put together more than he does. We're big
comics. After you play with it, then it's his.
Yeah, pretty much. But, I mean, if you're a fanboy, a fangirl, and you're into, like, Lord of the Rings and Marvel and DC Comics and stuff like that. And plus, we saw the Lego movie the other night. We loved it as a family. So, yeah. We're a Lego family, man. Legos are very pricey. So if the Stackdown is, you know, competition, but in WWE form, I'm sure my kid's going to eat that up. But, yeah, I have no problem with it. I can get into it. The minifigs look cool. And like I said, Scott put the image up on Facebook. If you're a fan of the page, go like it and check out the thread for this week's questions. And it's up there. And I like Legos, period, so.
Yeah, I think Legos are just like a timeless thing, you know. They're not getting old anytime soon, so. Whether it's WWE or Star Wars or whatever, it's always going to be over. So I think this is good for WWE, not just because, you know, it gives them another avenue to, you know, go forth in. But it's like Lego's a huge company. So for them to be kind of aligned with them now, you know, WWE is making huge moves right now. And like what you mentioned with the television networks. Like, they're considering it, you know, having it on network television again. You know, WWE is, well, they never played it small, but now they're just getting even bigger. You know, from the movies to this, to the network, everything is coming together. We're, yeah, you know, caught in Vince McMahon's web.
And they're putting out a Scooby-Doo animated WWE movie. I think it comes out next month or April, I think it comes out.
John Cena's going to be in it?
They're all going to be in it, apparently. George Rivera wants to know, Dave, what the fuck, the posters?
Ugh. Hit me up with the posters, man. I'll give you all the details you need. Hit me up personally.
And he wants to know, do you think a talent like Bad News Brown will be over with the fans of today? Dave?
I guess going in line, because what was it? Somebody brought up the Bad News Brown stint in GWF, and he was tagging with Big Bully Busick. And I remember when Big Bully Busick came out in, what, 94, 93? Right. And when I first saw this, I was like, wow, this is so outdated to the point where the man would have very little impact on, you know, what I thought of him as a wrestler. And if Bad News Brown were to come around today, I think to a degree it would be, you know, outdated. Granted, you know, he was kind of a proto, one of the prototypes for Stone Cold Steve Austin, however you want to perceive that. But I think if he came into the WWE or any federation right now, acting the way that he acted then, I think it would be over to a degree, but it probably wouldn't have as long as a shelf life. Pardon me, you know, as he was able to pull it out from the 70s to the 80s to the early 90s.
Yeah, you know what? I think he would be over, what, maybe to an extent. Like, he'd have to perform a little more in terms, not in the ring. I'm talking about, like, outside. He can yell and call people names, but now you have to put a little more to it now. You have to be a little more creative if this was, you know, now, I think. So, I mean,
yeah, because if you look at a lot of his promos back then, it's like, you know, the whole, like, shut up and, you know, you're a punk and all this other kind of stuff, you know. That doesn't fly so much nowadays. You have to have some sort of flair, some sort of creativity to what you're calling people out on, too.
Yeah. So, you know, again, it's, and wrestling fans are smarter now, they're more ignorant, too. And they're very finicky about their information and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, they'd want the character to be presented with a little more content. You know, give him more of a backstory, not just he's from Harlem and he hangs out with sewer rats and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and plus, you know, fans nowadays, I'm not sure how it was back then because, you know, I just ate up whatever was being thrown at me, but it seems nowadays fans are just more picky. They're more, their standards are obscenely high to the point where it's very hard to discriminate whether somebody could actually live up to the expectations of a wrestling fan nowadays.
All right. So the next question actually sparked some interest on the thread, which I'm not surprised came from Lopez, who, if you don't know, Dan's a fantastic blogger. Check out Handsome Dan's Last Word on the on Ring Wars and Wrestling Ramble. Yeah, it's good stuff. Good stuff. No, he did a really good job on that last blog that he posted. All right, Dan wants to know. He asked the Wizards this a long time ago, but I'd like to hear your take on it. Bad News Brown's gimmick was similar to that of Stone Cold Steve Austin's prior to Austin turning babyface. Do you think Bad News could have gotten over as a rebellious face? Maybe a Jack Tunney as his adversary?
Since they already, you know, were butting heads, you know, at that time. And I even posted the video of Bad News Brown, like, throttling him with his friggin' tie, you know, saying, you know, well, you know, how come I'm not getting my shot? You know, is it because Elizabeth was giving you favors? Is that why you're protecting the Macho Man? And I don't know. I think just I'm not sure what time specifically he was going for.
The Attitude Era.
Attitude Era. Man, that's such a tough call to make. I would just say no. Just out of like due to his personality, he was so knee deep in being a loner and so knee deep in, you know, just being completely anti authority, where it kind of like wasn't cool in a way. You know what I mean? Like it just there was nothing that caught on with him in the 80s to be a face, so I don't really see how he would catch on as a face in the Attitude Era, so no.
I'm going to say yes, Attitude Era, but no now. And I say yes in the Attitude Era because he would need like that corporate Vince McMahon backing. You know what I'm saying? Like he would need that to be, you know, to do the face turn, or like a Shane McMahon, you know, something like some kind of swerve.
Because there was a point in his career where he was a face,
right?
And then Inoki turned him heel. But I don't know. I honestly just can't see that dude as being a face. Like there would have to be, you know, his personality would have to change so much. You know, he would have to. He was charismatic already, especially that Arsenio Hall interview. But it was to a point where it was just comical. It wasn't really
right.
It wasn't to a point where, you know, I would back this guy up.
Right. It was supposed to be.
And what are you going to fucking have, like a foam sewer rat that you're going to have your kid to be waving in the air?
Yeah, I mean, again, that would be like then it would get over. Now, not so much.
Yeah.
George said, my opinion, he could have pulled it off, but in the late 80s, there weren't too many black wrestlers in the WWE that really got a good push, and don't say JYD. He was mid-card level in certain cities. No, he was a mid-card guy here and his late in career. He was never a mid-card guy anywhere else before WWE, WWF, I should say.
Well, I think in the George Klein book mentioned that there were certain areas that he wasn't over, but you know, once what was it? He was also like a heel in Stampede,
right,
Big Daddy Ritter,
right? But he was a big. I mean, anywhere he went, he was a big name in Stampede and NWA, and then once he. And then, obviously, Mid-South, he was champion. But once he got to WWF, he was a mid-card guy. But he was over. That's the thing, too. You can be the mid-card guy, but you can be over. You can ask guys like Chico Santana. I'm sorry, Dave. Ivan Putski. Pedro Morales, even as a world champion, I think he was over more as an IC champion. If you go back and watch, that's just my opinion. Let's see what other. Okay, Eric wants to know if you could change history. Who would you have liked to see win the world title? I think we mentioned this last week. Magnum TA or David Von Erich? Of course, I'd like to see Magnum TA win the world title. David Von Erich was destined to be great. I don't know if he would have been a long reigning champion, but I.
Because they were considering putting the belt on him.
Yeah, he was the best. He was the most talented, David.
Yeah.
David was the most talented, bar none. He would have been that guy that went to Japan. He could have been a Brody.
He was that guy that went to Japan and then he died there.
I'm just saying, like, he could have been that guy if he stayed there. He could have been like a Brody or a Hanson type, but he was that over. Not the style, I mean, like, the popularity.
Yeah.
Let's see. Any more questions?
I think for that, I would go with Magnum TA.
Yeah.
Just because.
He had the look.
He had the look, you know, he had the mustache. Hit the motorcycle, but for me, you know, there just wasn't enough, you know, time with David Von Erich to really see, you know, what, you know, how this guy could go. You know, obviously he was, you know, the more talented of the Von Erichs and such, but regardless, there would still be a Magnum TA, you know, at that time period. So, you know, And to my knowledge, it seemed like Magnum TA was significantly more over than David Von Erich.
All right. So before we get into our spotlight.
Weird Fairly sharecropper hour.
Yeah. You posted something about Taker Street. Do you want to get into that? We should have talked about it before. We were just skipping back and forth, but there was so many things to cover. I just didn't. You wrote on Facebook that you were watching the streak on Netflix.
Yes.
And
they have first 20 matches on Netflix.
All right. And Dave mentioned on recent matches he shat on the podcast, which he did, and he's taking it back. Some are absolutely excellent, despite the year after year spots almost identical. Several fall finishes, tables, opponents yelling for Taker to stay down, blah, blah, blah. The story remains the same. The usual suspects are the opponents. So let's get the discussion going now. How would you book this year's streak?
We talked about it earlier, Sting.
Now.
No doubt about it, Sting.
I have a wonderful contest idea.
Okay.
Since we are in WrestleMania mode, officially, right?
WrestleMania season.
Yeah, Dave and I have a huge month of March almost planned out, hopefully, by the opening of the live show, we're going to have...
It's just going to be only WrestleManias, right?
It's pretty much. I mean, unless there's something else going on, I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be WrestleMania month, because it's 30th anniversary, man.
Yeah, this is huge. I don't really look forward to WrestleMania, but this one I'm honestly looking forward to. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's up in the air. A lot of matches have not been announced, and you know, from a lot of the rumor mill, it seems like, you know, there's a lot of rewrites going on. So we could potentially have a much better WrestleMania than we were expecting. And also the Hall of Fame is stacked.
Right. So here's what I want. I want our fans to book this year's streak. Okay?
Okay.
And like Dave mentioned, how would you book this year's streak match? Dave mentioned putting Sting in the match, but Dave doesn't say, you know, Dave didn't mention how it would finish.
Yeah.
I just asked Dave if Sting would do the job. Does he have to? Does it continue? Does it end? And who is the faithful opponent? Now, Dave mentioned to walk through Hell's Gate. Dave mentioned Sting. I want our fans to book it. You know, don't book the Mania card. Book this match. And should we do the email? Yeah, we should do the email. This way.
Yeah, hit it from all sides.
Right. So email us, turnbuckle throwbacks1@gmail.com. And I want you guys to book that match. I want a description. I want a couple of paragraphs. How you're booking it, who's in the match, how you're
entering. Who's interfering.
Are there run-ins? Does Taker get buried? Does he bury somebody? Does the ghost of Paul Bearer fucking come out in New Orleans with some
voodoo? Does the Mean Street Posse make a return?
Right. Does Mike Mondo and the Spirit Squad come out? I mean, really. All joking aside, though, book it. And
start to finish.
Right. So, all right. And one more question. You asked this question. How do you feel about WWE repackaging guys, period? Well, nowadays established to an extent. Established or not, really, do guys keep their own name and gimmick, but most get a new name, new style, new everything. Is it necessary to do these days, and do you feel it's appropriate? We got a couple of responses. AJ Maggot says, sometimes it needs to change a name, a gimmick, Husky Harris, Bray Wyatt's a perfect example. But sometimes they fuck it up completely. Look what they've done to Leo Kruger. It's a damn shame. Mm. Lopez says it perpetuates the illusion, which is why I don't mind it. I used to hate it as a kid because I thought Iron Sheik showing up as Colonel Mustafa or Mark Callis as The Undertaker was fucking ridiculous. But if they're going to really invest in a character, then that's what you pretty much have to do. You never enjoy a movie throughout The Lone Ranger if they kept referring to Johnny Depp as the man formerly known as Jack Sparrow. I hate Dean Ambrose's style. By the way, Rollins and Reigns are the most convincing and entertaining in the ring. Let's see who else. Scott says, I wish they would keep their names and gimmicks. Baza says, I yearn for the days where the wrestlers had artistic control. Now, you're right and you're wrong, Baz. some guys had creative control and artistic control. Like, they would, to an extent, like, they would, you know, let you add stuff to your character or take away stuff, but you'd always have to be in that character.
Dusty Rhodes didn't pick those polka dots.
No, he did not. As for any gimmick and name changes, I feel it's the best within the context of a storyline, Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty. Now, here's where that makes sense to me. This ADHD internet wrestling community era that we live in now, Dave, I think it's, how do I say it without sounding like a tool, but like, I don't think it makes a big difference anymore. If you're gonna repackage somebody that's really good talent wise, or the all around, let's say you have like a Dolph Ziggler, good example.
Yeah.
Let's say you repackage Ziggles. You take the you dye his hair. You take the neon Don Johnson fucking jacket off of him, and I made Don Johnson reference. I'm showing my age again, but. But, like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's okay. There's plenty of room for Don Johnson on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But you see what I'm saying? Like, I think it's better for the more – and I don't even know if this makes sense, but I think it favors the guys who are more talented. Like, the guys who aren't that talented, like, who can only cut a promo but they're shit in the ring or vice versa.
Yeah.
If you change their character, you may mess up the whole flow.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense, or am I just being facetious? I don't, you know, or am I sounding facetious? Because, again, it's not, you know, the talented guys can do it, like the Husky Harris, Bray Wyatts, the Ziggles of the world, even like the guys from The Shield, or who's the guy I really like, the smart guy?
Ryback?
No, Ryback's not smart. The fucking Silence, what the hell is his name? Damian Sandow.
Yeah.
That guy. That guy is a fantastic talent.
He's got his own Lego figure.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he's part of the Lego series.
You know, but if you repackaged Undertaker 20 years ago or 10 years ago, I don't know. Would it have worked? You never know.
Well, they did repackage The Undertaker, but as the biker Undertaker.
But he was always The Undertaker. He was Dead Man, Dead Man Inc., Dead Man Walking, Limp Bizkit, blah, 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 blah.
Right? Booger Red.
Right, right. Corporate Ministry, you know. So, and I agree with Lopez where I didn't like Colonel Mustafa with the Sheik. Stuff like that angered me.
Especially when guys like Rowdy Piper were saying on live pay-per-view, you know, when he had fucking Hogan in the camel clutch, like, oh, I remember this when it happened back in 83. Well, when actually, in reality, it happened in 84, but according to Piper, it was 83.
Right. So, and then, like, another thing that bothered me, like, given Chico Santana the Matador thing, made no sense to me.
Well, at least with that, they, you know, still refer to him as Chico Santana. He just said that he was, you know, finding his roots or whatever bullshit that he was going through to, you know, be a man and be the El Matador.
Fuck that. He could have been Chico his whole career and called it a day. Mm. He was another guy popular over all the time. Props to our buddy Lawrence Jackson from Mega Powers Radio. He won the Hulkamania package from the Mega Powers.
He posted that picture recently, but I sent that a while ago. How long did it fucking take him to get that fucking DVD?
Maybe he didn't get a chance to watch it, or he didn't get a chance to.
Yeah.
Dude, I get packages all the time that they sit in my front room, my front hall, to like, you know, for like a week.
Yeah.
Because my wife never takes the mail in, you know. So, all right, shout out to him. And again, one more thing, we got a fantastic email today that I was having a crappy day until...
So was I.
Yeah, until Mega Power sent this to me, and I was like, this is fantastical. You want to get into this, or you want me to get into... I can get into it, I guess.
Yeah, get into it, because I've been getting into it all on the internet, so you can get into it on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dave put forth this campaign to have Emerson Murray on from the Bruiser Brody book And he actually reached out to the editor and founder of Crowbar Press, who is Scott Teal, and who got us Emerson Murray a few weeks ago. And Scott listened to the podcast, and he sent Dave and I a fantastic email, and he wrote, and I quote, "Your interview with Emerson, probably the best interview I've ever heard anyone conduct with one of my authors. Since the group has been loyal and vocal in helping us make the throwback show, what is to provide you with material that is worth your time, I thought I'd share a quote with you guys." And that's what Dave put. And Scott also mentioned that he was excited. He was happy that we didn't ask the obvious questions and, like, questions that obviously where guys didn't read the book would ask, just like career questions.
Yeah.
And Dave and I made a point not to do that because, A, we already knew the answer to half the fucking questions. That's first of all.
Yeah.
And B, as budding broadcast journalists, Dave and I wanted to find out the soul of the book because the soul of Bruiser Brody was a real important to us as wrestling fans, to Emerson, who was a big Bruiser Brody wrestling fan, and more importantly, to Scott Teal, who found this company and who's obviously a fan, and they want the very best for their guys, and we brought that out. So I'm glad, and
at the end of the day, they want to sell books.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we can't give away everything that's in the book. You know, we gotta tease you guys so you can buy the book, so you can enjoy it as we enjoyed reading it. And, you know, first and foremost, you know, there aren't too many guys writing books about, you know, these legends. You know, it's very few and far between. So, you know, guys like Emerson who took 7 years out of his life to write this book, you know, I want to give the man the respect that he deserves and give you guys the enjoyment that you deserve by picking up the book and, you know, jumping right in.
I'm kind of a mark when it comes to DVDs and books and shit like that. So,
yeah.
And I will endorse anything I love until the cows come home.
Mm.
Even if you're not a Brody fan, if you're a newer wrestling fan, after hearing that interview and now getting getting this from Scott, go buy the book. Really,
yeah.
it's
buy all the books from Crowbar Press because they're fantastic. I have a few of them. Got the Brody book, got the Hansen book, got the Fez book, they're just phenomenal pieces of work. You know, you don't really come across this kind of wrestling knowledge these days in book form or internet form or anything. And, you know, the stories that these guys have to tell is just phenomenal. And you ain't going to get it anywhere else but Crowbar Press.
And I'm going to say this, and I'll probably repeat myself. Just because I'm old now, I like to repeat myself a lot. But I'm gonna say this. The stuff that we talk about is stuff that's written. And with wrestling, it's never written in stone.
Yeah.
So you get, and like our buddy Will Sweeney says from Tattoos and Touchdowns, there's three sides to every story. There's your side, my side, and then there's the truth. And Will is a big proponent of that. That's why he's one of my best friends in the whole wide world. And him being a broadcast journalist taught me that as well. And I'm not here to just interview people for the sake of interviewing people. We're bringing them on our show because they are playing a significant part of what we're doing.
Yeah.
And this is not a knock on any other show that brings guys on it, like the Wizards. They interview guys all the time. But they interview, like, recent guys and, like, indie guys and guys who – and some top guys. Like, they've interviewed amazing people, you know, guys that have done tremendous things. Guys like Steve Corino and Rob Van Dam. And, I mean, they had over 100 guests. But that's
their show. They've gotten better over the years, too.
Because they're wrestling fans. And we're wrestling fans, too. I just don't see myself as the guy bringing people on here every week – to talk. You know, we're in talks with a couple of people to come on, but there's a reason why they want to plug something, and we want information from them. It works both ways. I'm not bringing people on for the sake of bringing them on. We brought Emerson on because we love Bruiser Brody, and the book was so well done that it wasn't just a book. It was quotes from people who were near and dear to Brody, and it took, like Dave said, it took 7 years of Emerson's life to do that, and it took us 7 years to get it and read it. So,
yeah.
Either way, go get the book. It's a fantastic read, and big things coming for us as well as Crowbar Press. We're going to have a nice working relationship with them. Hopefully we'll have some other guys on, which from the way it sounds, maybe we can do that.
Yeah, there's so many awesome titles out there. Actually, one book that I would like to pick up sometime soon is, I've got a book on the history of the Mid-Atlantic title.
Oh, boy.
I'm curious about that.
Yeah, you know, we can do a series of podcasts on Mid-Atlantic, and we're probably going to, because it's going to be, we're not just going to pick out certain cards, we'll pick out certain wrestlers, certain matches. That's the best part of it. You know, that's why I started this thing. So, All right. So we got all the current stuff out of the way. We spent way too much time, but not really. But we had a lot to talk about tonight.
Yeah.
So, again, Black History Month is almost done.
It's here. We're knee deep in Black History Month.
We're talking about Alan Coge tonight. And
one and only Bad News Allen, a.k.a. Bad News Brown.
Now, like I mentioned before, like Dave mentioned before, he was a unique guy, first of all, because he is a guy who was a professional martial artist. And
it didn't 1976 bronze medalist in judo.
In judo in Montreal, yeah. And he even trained in Japan. You know, here's the thing. He wasn't... A lot of guys back then did not get into wrestling because they wanted to be professional wrestlers. They did it to make money, and they didn't know anything else.
Yeah.
Alan Coge was right place, right time, living near poverty, solely for the love of what he had going on, which was judo, and he started getting trained by Antonio Inoki around the late 70s.
Hell of a guy to, you know, have him break him into the business.
Now, you know him as Bad News Brown. And he had a couple names. He was Buffalo Alan Coge, Bad News Allen, BL, Bad News, 6'3", 270 pounds, native New Yorker, billed from Harlem, New York. He was from Harlem, New York, was trained by, like, Dave and I mentioned Antonio Inoki and Stu Hart. He did some stints in New Japan, and he actually cut his teeth, though, Dave, in Stu Hart Stampede, right?
Yeah, that's where he got, you know, most of his time in wrestling, you know. He had like a little tenure in the WWWF with Blassie as his manager, but that was all due in part to his relationship with New Japan Pro Wrestling. But for the most part, he spent most of his time in Stampede Wrestling with Stu Hart.
He actually lived in Calgary. Like, he made Calgary's home.
Yeah, he met his wife there and settled down.
Right. He had some
in the Great White North.
Yeah, he had some dynamic matches in Stampede.
Yeah, he was, he wasn't in the first ladder match, but he was in a ladder match with Bret Hart in Stampede, which was like this, like, rickety-ass fucking painter's ladder. It's like a clip of it on YouTube. It's only, like, 4 minutes long, but, you know, before they ever had their feud in WWF. You know, these guys were butting heads in Stampede Wrestling, doing some awesome fucking matches.
Yeah, I sent you one match with him and Bret Hart, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
I tried finding the Dynamite Kid stuff. I couldn't find anything. I guess
that was I was trying to look for some of that too, and there's like some people that talk about like them having like this crazy cage match. Couldn't find that. You know, I know WWE has, you know, has that footage. They own that stuff. I would love to see more of that.
I was going to mention that. I think with the network, they're going to start putting that stuff on there.
I would hope so. You know, they have so many great, you know, companies that they own, so many great television shows. Like, I was trying to look for some of that Bad News Brown in, or Bad News Allen at the time in WWF. Couldn't find any of that. You know, YouTube only has so much footage unless Daily Motion has something or some of our listeners can help us track down some of this stuff. But it's absolute gold. And that Bret Hart match that you said was fantastic. And that was for Stampede's North American Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah, he often referred to himself in interviews as the Ultimate Warrior, which obviously was used famously later by
Jim Hellwig.
Jim Hellwig, yeah.
He was using it way before Hellwig, too.
He was. I forgot to mention, he won the bronze in Montreal with the Olympics, but in the Pan American Games, he won gold in 1967 in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and in Mexico City in 1975. So he was a career martial artist, mastering in the discipline of judo, like way before, like almost 10 years, 15 years before he became a pro wrestler.
And much longer before Larry Zbysko and superstar Billy Graham started learning karate.
So now fast forward to 1988, the Stampede promotion is now gone. Vince owns all the good talent that was there.
Well, that was the thing, actually. When Vince bought out Stampede, he bought out the contracts for, you know, Bret and Dynamite and Davey Boy Smith and Bad News Allen. But, you know, internet doesn't go into too many details, but they mentioned that Bad News Brown didn't want into that contract. It wasn't until around like another year later or so that he jumped in.
I read like three different pieces that did the same exact thing, and even if you look at Wikipedia, I believe they mentioned the Steve Austin thing, which Lopez does too. You know, and he played his part well. He, you know, he was not a team player, which in Survivor Series of 88,
he walked out.
Yeah. We mentioned.
Didn't he do that twice at Survivor Series? He just
right, 88, yeah, 88 and 89. He won the Battle Royal in WrestleMania 4 with the trophy with Bret Hart, right?
Yeah, how dare that fucking Canadian destroy that beautiful trophy of Bad News Browns.
Well, technically he was a Canadian citizen too because he moved there, but so he was.
He's from Harlem. He's American.
He was. He was a heel at this, you know, he sneak attack and. My favorite stuff with him was with Randy Savage.
And I agree.
Only because I'm not saying the stuff with Bret was bad. The stuff with Piper, I played that at the beginning of the show, was really good. That was WrestleMania 6, I believe it was.
Which, you know, one of our listeners wanted us to get into that. There's not too much to get into with the match. But, you know, the fact that Piper was wearing the blackface, you know, at WrestleMania 6. I'm sure that's what he wants us to talk about, and it's very simple, you know. Bad News Brown just did not want anything to do with it. Vince and Piper were complete, according to, you know, Bad News Brown, you know, Vince and Piper were, you know, like, this is going to be great, it's going to be over, you know, nothing to worry about. And, you know, for Bad News Brown, just fucking hated the whole thing. Well, Bad News Brown has like had a big gripe with WWF and Vince. You know, thought, you know, typical wrestler kind of talk. Well, I don't want to say typical because everybody's got their own story, but you know, sometimes it sounds like the same old story. And that was basically he wasn't getting what he was promised. You know, felt racism played a part in you know, why he wasn't given his world title run.
Oh, get into that. Before we get into that, I just...
Yeah.
The stuff leading up to Piper with Savage, more importantly here on the in the Northeast area, with I saw two or maybe three matches with them, two at the Garden and one at the Meadowlands Arena, which is now, you guys know better, is the Izod Center. Again, most of it was the same finish, just different arenas. But it was just, like, good. And here's two guys that are meticulous, two guys that can work. And Bad News Brown was in the right place at the right time. He had he had matches with everybody that was good.
Hogan.
Well, Piper, that started on...
The Rumble.
The Brother Love Show. And then he had the brief run with Hogan for the title, like you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff with Hogan was good. Was really good.
Yeah, you know, I love that match on Saturday night's main events where Bad News Brown brings out the shovel. And then at the fucking end, he's, you know, Hogan's groveling at his feet. And he's like, look at your champion. Look at this fool.
Well,
he's like, ghetto blaster time, fool. And then, you know, of course, he fucking misses it and loses the match. But that was just phenomenal. You weren't seeing dudes do that kind of stuff to Hogan. You know, maybe an Andre was able to, you know, paintbrush him and, you know, toss him around and stuff like that. But to get on the mic and just berate, you know, the world champion, Hulk Hogan, you know, that wasn't happening. So Hogan letting him do that was huge.
So upon his feud with Jake Roberts, he gets a spot on the Arsenio Hall show. Now, I totally forgot about this until I found it and sent it to you when we first knew we were going to do the Bad News stuff.
Yeah.
So I want to play – it's a seven-minute clip. I don't want to play the whole thing. I just want to play about a minute or two of the interaction between Bad News Brown and Mr. Arsenio Hall. So let's do that right now. All right. Oh, hello, nurse.
Let me tell you something about this snake. Now, this situation started. Mm-hmm. I was having myself a birthday celebration. I got me the first gift that anybody ever gave me. And then this idiot puts a rubber snake in there. And
you're afraid of snakes?
You're from Harlem. Bad News ain't afraid of nothing. I'm not afraid of no snakes. I'm not afraid of Arsenio Hall. What are you looking for?
Are you afraid of snakes, man? Be honest.
What is that? An empty bag?
What? Tell me whether you're afraid of snakes or not.
Hey, I'm not afraid of nothing, all right? Now, don't start on me.
Wait, but if
it don't was... start on me. Let me tell you about Jake, right?
If there was a snake in there, it would probably be a problem, huh?
It wouldn't be no problem. It would be your problem. Because I'd get up, and what I would do to you, your mother would be very unhappy. What you doing?
Let's just see what's in here. You ain't afraid of nothing. Let's
that's see right. I ain't afraid of nothing. You ain't got nothing in there.
Let's just see what's in it.
You ain't got nothing in there. Hey, man!
Since you guys can't see, well, we put it on a Facebook page, but what Arsenio Hall does, he pulls out, obviously, a boa constrictor from a duffel bag. I think the best part of the whole entire interview was that there's a couple of times where Bad News gets up and, like, tries to get in Arsenio's face, and Arsenio runs off to the middle of the stage. On top of that, every time I did a close-up on Bad News, he tried so hard to keep a straight face.
Oh, yeah. You could tell he just wanted to start cracking up.
Right. So that was very, very fun as a wrestling fan to see that. Even as a young kid, because I was like, man, this is just funny. Like, you knew he was trying to keep not break kayfabe and
well, that was the thing with Arsenio. Like, you know, for a lot of listeners who don't know about Arsenio Hall, like... When this show was going on, it was like the hottest show.
Yeah, and he's on now, and
it ain't as hot as it used to be.
I love him to death, and he's still 1990 funny. And I don't know if it's maybe because I'm old now or because I just he's, I guess, an old guy trying to be relevant again. I can't, and I want to like him. He's such a likable guy, you know. And he had other wrestlers on. He had Hogan on.
Yeah, they had like a big, like exclusive, like WWF deal, and they had like all the top guys. Hogan lied on there about the steroid scandal.
That's right, he most certainly did. We spoke about that. They had Rick Rude and Bobby Heenan on.
Ultimate Warrior.
Ultimate Warrior. They had, I believe, Macho Man was on there.
Yeah.
All right.
They even had fucking Jason from the Friday the 13th movies on there.
Yeah, not Jason the Terrible from Japan.
No.
No, okay. All right.
I only have one question for you about Arsenio Hall.
Okay. All right.
The show now, do they still do the hoo-hoo-hoo?
They do, yeah. They do.
Yeah, I got to watch it.
It's not, you know what, dude? It's not like when he does his opening monologue. Like, I watched the opening night with my wife, and we sat there now. If you guys don't know, my wife is like 6 years younger than I am. So a lot of the times I bring something up to her. Or even to Dave, and it's like they both look at me like I'm a retard because it's like they don't get the humor I get because I'm old. So we watched the opening monologue, and it was like I tried so hard to dig it. Like, if I know we have somebody cool on, I'll still record it. But it's like, I don't know. I tried, man. I really, really tried to dig it. It's not terrible. It's just, it's like, he's like trying to recreate 1990, you know?
Yeah, and you know, he doesn't have Bad News Brown there complaining about the catering.
No.
Like he did on the show.
So, Bad News, like Dave said, was very unhappy with his character. Apparently, he claims Vince failed to live up to his promise, making him the company's first black champion. Bad News leaves after SummerSlam 90. Now, the most well-documented story about Bad News Brown came in a form of an incident that took place on a tour bus for New Japan.
Oh, yeah.
Dynamite Kid, very outspoken in his older years. And
always outspoken.
He was very well known for him, you know, being a tough guy and stuff like that. He accentuated in a confrontation with Andre the Giant, who made a racist comment on a tour bus.
He dropped the N-bomb.
Yeah, he dropped the N-bomb. So Bad News overhears it, made the bus driver stop, walking off and yelling off at Andre to get off and fight him. And one of the few times you can never remember him backing down, Andre did not move from his seat and apologized for the remark. I think that's a culture thing. You have now two older guys, you know.
Actually, one thing that we haven't mentioned was, you know, during this entire time that he's been wrestling, dude's like been in his late 30s, early 40s.
Well, I was going to mention that after this. He was old for a wrestler, not
yeah.
And Andre, who also was, this is, well, he died in 93, so he was also in his mid to late 40s. So now, you know, and this is well documented. Like, this is not a thing where this was made up and Andre spoke about it. Like, it really happened and he apologized.
A lot of people talk about it.
Yeah, it was a funny thing. Now, it was funny to them, but not to Bad News. And again, that's a culture thing. I don't think Andre was a racist.
I think he was just being one of the boys, and, you know, that involves just saying some dumb shit that you shouldn't be saying.
I mean,
he happened to say it around the wrong dude.
I mean, half the guys Andre rolled with that tagged with them were African-American, you know?
Yeah.
Tony Atlas and
Superfly Snuka.
Superfly Snuka and JYD.
He was black, but he was still not white.
He was Samoan, which is almost black.
Yeah.
All right, so... So now this is the tail end of it. He goes to work for some promotions, including the birth, I think, of mixed martial arts, which is the WFI promotion.
Yeah.
Now, that was the prequel to Pancrase and Ultimate Fighting and Pride and all other stuff.
Yeah, and this was, Akira Maeda's promotion that he co-owns. And, you know, it was part mixed martial arts, you know, shoot fighting. But they also include pro wrestlers, and everything was a work.
Yeah.
For the most part. I don't know if there was any actual, like, legit shoot fights, but for the most part, all the matches were worked.
Yeah, but this was, like I said, I think this was the prequel to, you know, Ultimate Fighting and stuff like that. So
yeah, absolutely. And the style of fighting was not, it wasn't like a wrestling match. It's exactly like shit that you would see on UFC.
Right. So Bad News continued to work the indie promotions. He had severe knees, and I think he retired near 1999. And
yeah, but by then he was like doing a lot of like indie stuff and all that, like the UWFI. That was more like early to mid 90s.
Yeah. So he. Here's something I didn't know about him, according to my notes here. He stayed in Calgary, and he was teaching college wrestling with a famous wrestling coach, Leo Jean. And two things I didn't know. I didn't know he wanted to start his own promotion, which he could have, because he had that kind of clout in the business. And he was well-respected, and that's the thing, too. At this point, he's 60 years old. 60 years old, made his debut in 77. Think about that for a second. He was wrestling in New Japan before Calgary in 1977. So,
well, he won the bronze medal when he was like 34. So
right, and he won the gold in 67.
Yeah.
So he was, you know, this was 10 years prior. And then he won his last gold medal 2 years before he started pro wrestling. So
yeah.
Yeah, and so he was a mall cop in suburban Alberta, Canada, in Western Canada.
Yeah. I think he was, like, training people at the same time while he was a mall cop.
Right. He was training with Leo Jean, who famous.
So imagine, like, some dude at a fucking Spencer's Gifts or something like that. Stealing like a fake dildo, and then you have to be confronted by Bad News Brown.
Right, exactly. But I mean, half these kids don't know, and then he gives you the fucking double leg enziguri, you know.
Get the ghetto blaster in front of your friends.
Bad News died March of 2007 after having chest pain. He rushed to the hospital. He passed away.
Heart attack.
We mentioned his judo accolades, but I didn't get to mention his wrestling accolades. He was a Stampede North American Heavyweight Champion not once, not twice, but four times.
Good God.
He won three NWA singles titles. He was the Florida Bahamian Champion, the Florida Heavyweight Champion, and the Southern Heavyweight Champion, which is another the version of the Florida title. He was a tag team champion, NWA America's tag team champion with Leroy Brown and Victor Rivera. And he was the Polynesian Pacific heavyweight champion. And he won the IWA championship.
Yeah.
And the ICW. So, again, belts before he was on TV regularly in the States.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything bad with him.
So he's got some bad blood with like dudes like Bret Hart, but he's still. Well, I don't want to say still because he's dead, but you know he held like a huge grudge with Vince McMahon. You know, didn't feel that he was treated fairly. You know, had to fight Piper in blackface, getting hit with a fucking Michael Jackson glove. Actually, that my favorite line from the WrestleMania 6 match is. Piper pulls out this friggin' Michael Jackson glove from his trunks, and Jesse Ventura's like, "It's a Michael Jackson glove. Is that legal?" Some ridiculous shit that the man had to go through.
So, I mean, that's it, man. That's Bad News Brown.
Yeah, but the man lived a very unique career for somebody who didn't win any major titles. And kind of like Brody, as we mentioned on that podcast, he was a dude that was able to do the brawling style. But, when he had to, especially in UWFI, it's a completely different cat. This guy had some technical skills. He was able to really, he was able to mat wrestle. He was able to lock people in submissions. And that a dude, when he was in UWFI, the guy was in his late 40s. So he lived up to the hype. And, could he have been, something bigger? We'll never know. But, for the time being, his career as it stands is remarkable, to say the least.
Well, that was my question. My question was going to be to you. Do you think if he would have stayed in Japan with Inoki, would he have been as big as, say, a Hansen or a Brody or an Andre?
In Japan, yes.
Like he would have been the guy, and that is the thing too. Could he have been a face?
In Japan, I think it would be more likely for him to become a face. But I just think in WWF, just the way that things worked over there, I think it would be exceedingly difficult. In Japan, it's a lot easier. Even today, it really just comes down to you saving somebody or something like that. The face changes, heel changes are very simple over there, and I'm sure they'll continue to be so. But for Bad News Allen in New Japan, Japan is just one of those countries that's accepting of anybody that has a reasonable amount of talent, which is why a guy like MVP can go over there and they're willing to make him the first, New Japan IWGP Intercontinental Champion, They're willing to give people opportunities as long as they're willing to, put out some work, even if it's very minimal work.
And there you have it, folks. There you have it.
That's Bad News Brown, Alan Koig in a nutshell.
All right. Well, that's going to... do we want to talk about anything else before we wrap it up and do our plugs and all the other good stuff?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
All right, so we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network.
Rant. Seem to be on the rants.
That's right, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, 9 other great shows. Shout out to all you guys, we love you. Midnight Jury, Fallen Angels, Neckbreaker Guys, 2.5 Wrestlers. I'm missing a few of them already.
DJ Blocko.
Stickman, Wolfman, Jack Foley, Just Incredible, and of course...
Hey, Stickman better watch out, He wasn't reading my post correctly earlier today, and I know Tony Z was kind of egging him on, and, Stickman, you better... Be careful about who you align yourself with.
Be nice to Stick. He's a good people.
Well, this is Black Powers you're talking to right now, so I'm just saying.
Anyway, support all the shows on the Shining Wizards Network. We are rantemradio.com, going live March 5th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Every Wednesday night, go to rantemradio.com, check out The Rant. Check out What Are You Reading? Check out the Wrestling Call-In Show and all the fine programming over at the Ranch Out, AA, and all the cats over there. We are on Stitcher. We are on iTunes. We are on Buzzsprout. We have some friends of the network. We have, of course, GeekCityIndustry.com, our pals over at the Mega Powers Radio Show. Shout out to you guys. Shout out to Brody and AJ Maggot from the Bloke Show. Love the Bloke Show. I'll be actually beyond the Bloke Show.
Really?
Yeah, Thursday night. They asked me to call in. They're going to do some old school.
You're going to call into Australia.
Yeah, WrestleMania 12, bro. It's going to be fucking, it's going to be fantastic, actually. Yeah, man. Shout out to all those guys. Shout out to Don Tony, Kevin Castle, DT Get Well. Shout out to Wrestling Soup. Shout out to NXT Cast.
Crowbar Press,
thank you so much for the email, Scott. We love you.
Yeah.
And Of course, you can find
us on WPW.
Yeah, man. We got a big show coming up March 8th. I was about to get into that.
Yeah.
As I play some Harlem Shuffle in the background. All right. World Premier Wrestling presents Resurrection. Come be a part of a spectacular event March 8, 2014, as they launch their first show at the World Resort Casino. Pre-show is the Holy Grail Fan Fest, 2 to 6 p.m., showtime 7:30, doors open at 6:45. Fan Fest will have over 60 wrestlers, pro athletes, including legends of the past and superstars of today. Fans will be able to take personal photos, get autographs of their favorite stars. For ticket,
we're going to gamble all our money. We're going to get Jimmy Snuka drunk, and we're going to make him kill a hooker.
Okay, brother. For ticket information, go on Spectacular Shows. Click on the ticket page and learn below. Upcoming show schedule at the Resort World Casino in beautiful Queens, New York City. Go to WPWWrestling.com. Customer service at WPWWrestling.com as well for tickets. All right.
We want to see all you beer belly sharecroppers out at Resorts Casino.
That's right. Facebook.com/TurnbuckleThrowbacks is the Facebook page. We have a group page. Join that as well. We're on a Twitter machine at TBuckleTBacks. Email us, TurnbuckleThrowbacks1@gmail.com. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boo, Geek Life Radio every Saturday evening, 9 p.m. Central Time. Is it 9? No, it's 9 p.m. Central here, 8 there.
Okay.
I get my fucking time mixed up already. Unbelievable.
Yo, if you people want posters, hit me up. I got posters to sell you guys.
We have t-shirts, asshole. Should we sell them first?
Yeah, we can do both.
All right. ProWrestlingTees.com.
If you buy a poster, you'll get a t-shirt.
/TurnbuckleThrowbacks. We got some cool stuff. And guys, like I said, book that Sting. Book the Undertaker streak match, man. Send us an email.
Win a prize.
Right, bitches. All right. So on behalf of the Mega Powers, as always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, bidding you adieu and reminding you to take care of yourselves and each other, avoid the clap, and that's going to wrap it up for us, right, Dave?
Yeah. I don't have anything catchy to say. What do black people say during Black History Month?
Just say
peace
goodbye.
Out.
Just say goodbye.
Bye. Yeah, yeah, yeah.